Pedro Hayden.
You really want to know what love is?
Yeah. Yes, tell us.
More than anything in the world, Ron.
Well, it's really quite simple. It's kind of like... Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night? When everything's a little clearer in the light of day, and we know the night is always gonna be there anyway. Thinking of you's working up my appetite. Looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Rubbing sticks and stones together, making sparks ignite. And the thought of loving you is getting so exciting. Sky rockets in flight. Afternoon delight.
Do you know what love is? I do. It's CITR Radio.
Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here.
Sexy in Van City may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. I hope you got to enjoy that full moon that was out, that super moon with all that amazing energy and totally romantic, totally ecstatic. And if you got a chance to be out and dance with the moon, howl with the moon the other night, I hope you did because it was just rockin' awesome stuff. Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And I've got an amazing guest on tonight. I haven't had her on for a while, but the podcast, and usually she's just super cool. She is the amazing, the wonderful Sherry Winston, who is one of the most incredible women. And I'm very, very, very lucky to have her on the show. And I can't believe you're calling in when it's 1 a.m. where you are.
Well, I'm a night owl, so I'm up howling at the moon here.
Ow!
Right?
It's so awesome. So it's good. So Sherry, I don't even know where to start. I just know that you are absolutely amazing, and I could gush about you so much because, yeah, whenever you've taught at any of the sexual health conferences like in Guelph, etc., I've had people who are just like, oh my goodness, you've had her on your show, really? That's so cool. So a lot of people are very starstruck by you in Canada. So, and I'm sure in the States, obviously, as well. But I was wondering if we could just touch on some of the work that you've done in the past as well, just in regards to the, I love the map to the sexual arousal for females. It's huge because it's one of the, like, especially that was my favorite parts of the book was just in terms of just the map, because it was one of the best maps I've seen actually of that part of the body. So.
Well, thank you. You know, my first book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, was really, it's just part of my mission to get this information out to women and people who love women, who partner with women. Before I was a sexuality teacher, I was a midwife, a nurse midwife and gynecology practitioner, and I did home birth and birth center birth, and I went to school for a lot of years and got all those degrees, and I did not learn the stuff that's in my first book in my professional education. And I was actually already working as a midwife before I started to discover that there were all these parts of the female body that I had never heard of, and I was stunned. I mean, it was really shocking when I first figured that out, and then I went on what I call the hunt for buried pleasure, and I started to discover all these other parts that they just aren't in our textbooks, and they're not in our textbooks, and that's what really inspired me to write that first book, because, you know, once we know what we've got and we understand that there's a whole amazing network of erectile tissue and how to get it all turned on, I mean, just sex gets so much better. I mean, that's just the only way to say it. It just gets way better.
And
we could use that because a lot of women are not having as much fun as they could be.
That is so true. All I have to do is just Google orgasm and just all the stuff that comes up. And women want to. And I give you kudos. Like, you should be getting, like, a Nobel Peace Prize for putting that together. Seriously. So.
Well, I think you should nominate me.
I don't know how you nominate people, but I'd be open to doing it if you can tell me how. So.
I have no idea. But, you know, actually, that book did win a big award because it won the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists Book of the Year Award because it really broke new ground and it was pretty radical and essential information. So I'm so proud of that book.
It's a pretty amazing book. I know that one of my old co-hosts for the radio show when I did Juicebox Radio, Julia Saunders, is a huge fan as well, who's a sex educator locally, mm-hmm. and was quite excited. And I'm even more excited because I love the books that I've read, but you've got a new one coming out as well.
Yes, I do. And talk about excited because, you know, it takes me a long time to write a book. So my new book is called Succulent Sex Craft, Your Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice.
Hmm.
And it's for everyone. It's for men and women. It's for singles and partners, you know, because a lot of books about sex are written assuming you have a partner. And not only do I not assume you have a partner other than yourself, I think even if you do have a partner, your sexuality begins with your relationship with yourself. So I think if we want to have better sex, we got to start with ourselves. So
mm-hmm.
A lot of focus on the book is really about that, how to learn to play your own instrument, as I like to call it.
I like that. I like that a lot. And I know it goes on sale. I'm just trying to think what the date is today because I believe it goes on sale on the 14th.
Yeah, well, we're doing an online book launch, you know, so the old days you'd have like a big party and people would come to the physical book launch, but we're doing that all online and it's really great. We're having this special deal, so for people who are listening now, catch this. It's if you buy the book in the 3-day book launch window, so that's the 14th through the 16th, so that's Sunday through Tuesday, you get access to what is now over $1,000 worth of free stuff from my sex teacher friends and empowerment coaches and ecstatic birth people and just all of these colleagues of mine who wanted to help support the book launch. So there's PDFs of books and audios and teleseries and just all kinds of really cool stuff that you can get for free along with the book. So, you know, if you're going to buy the book anyway, you might as well buy it when we launch it between Sunday and Tuesday and get all this cool stuff from my friends. And it's really good stuff. I mean, it's not, you know, like a bunch of crap. So.
And of course, I'm going to ask, what kind of stuff is there? Because the book itself is worth it, so straight up. So, but
thank
I mean, if you get
I
bonus,
so
it's kind of cool too.
Yeah, I think that I'm really so super proud of this one too. So I do think the book is worth it by itself. But I've got a bunch of Tantra teachers who are offering video and some audios and some ecstatic birth people and empowerment coaches and just all kinds of, you know, other people that are, you know, friends and colleagues of mine are just offering cool free stuff. So if anybody, the easiest thing to do is just go to succulentsexcraft.com and you will go to the landing page and you can see all the gifts and the whole thing. You can sign up and get an email reminder because, you know, you might not remember. It's several days away. You could forget by then. We want to make it really easy for people. So it's exciting.
No, I think it is really, really exciting. What can they expect in terms of the book itself? Like being able to have sex with oneself. And do you feel comfortable sharing a little bit about what's in it?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of foreplay tease?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, it's not even just a book because I really wanted the book to be something that I could update and keep adding to.
Mm.
So not only is there a book, but there's a section on my website. So anyone who buys the book can get this free membership. And there's all these additional practices and games and things on my website that I'm going to keep adding to.
Oh,
so that's
wow.
Kind of I know, it's just sort of like, I don't want to just write a book anymore. I want to have it be more. But it's full of practices and games and exercises and rituals and ideas for how you can learn to become an erotic virtuoso.
Hmm.
And just like becoming a master musician, it's a combination of our natural ability, because we are all born hardwired for ecstasy. I can tell you that from having been a midwife, that when babies are born naturally, usually at home or a birth center, but really natural birth, babies come out beaming and ecstatic.
It's
just completely different from what you see on TV. And so we've got that template in us, but we also have, just like musicians do, we've got this natural ability to make music and love sound and connect to melody. But if you really want to learn to be a musician, you have to learn to play your instrument. And so I do lots of things in the book where I help people understand all the different tools that we have inside us, all the things that we're already using in some way or another. You know, where we might be going to a meditation class where we use our breath, we might, for women who are pregnant or have had babies, you probably learned how to do Kegel exercises,
right? Mm-hmm.
Using your pelvic floor muscles. And so there's lots of things that we already do, tools of the mind, how we use our imagination and our intention. And when we start consciously using those tools, we can use them to enhance our erotic experience. And that's kind of what the whole book is about, really. It's about how to become an expert at your own erotic energy, so you can get way more turned on, way more orgasmic, have lots more pleasure, and when you choose to play duets with other people, you've got all these skills that you can bring to the interactions.
That is very, very exciting. What are some of the things that you've learned in the last bit? Because you're mentioning sometimes it takes a while to write a book, and everything you do is top grade quality.
Thank you.
So what are some of the things that you personally have learned that you recommend in your classes, etc., that are things that have changed a lot?
Well, you know, I've been doing this. I've been doing this work for so long in so many ways. I really started learning this stuff when I was a childbirth educator and a midwife. And I was learning how to use breathing and sound and movement and intention and awareness and ritual and, just all of these different tools to help women birth better.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually doing that for over 10 years before I realized I had unconsciously been using those same things and that had been enabling me to have better sex. I just didn't even get it. It was like 10 years before I was like, oh, I'm having better sex because I'm using my breath better and I'm making more sound and I'm connecting up internally to these different circuits. And when I got that epiphany, I said, wow, if I've come this far, and I have certainly progressed in the ease with which I could get turned on and be orgasmic. So I figured if I got that far without even trying, what would happen if I started studying on purpose? And then I started going to the Tantra classes and Taoist sexuality classes and Native American sexuality, just studying and modern Western science approach to sexology. And at that point, I thought then I was studying that stuff for my own sex life. And then was surprised to discover that all those things I was learning in those kinds of classes and books and studies, I was bringing to the births I was doing, and they were helping me be a better midwife. So that was kind of it's all connected. And then I retired from birthing babies, and then ever since, I've really been focusing on midwifing people's sexuality. So I've just been continuing to learn how to use my own tools and help other people gain access to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So this book is really kind of a culmination of, this makes me sound old, 35 years or more of studying and putting together these different pieces. So I think, I don't know that it's so much that I've learned new stuff in the last 3 or 4 years, although I guess I'm always learning,
mm-hmm.
but it's come together more and more and become more integral and connected. And I think what I've been learning, or hopefully what I've been learning, is how to transmit this in book form,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I've been teaching it in classes and talking about it in presentations. So I think the learning for the last couple of years was, how can I take this and put it into words in a book that's going to have the same effect and help people get the same kind of transformational experiences that they might get from a class.
Is there anything, though, for the years that you've learned in regards to sexuality that surprises you or that has shifted in the last few years?
Well, you know, I think I'm always going to be surprised in some ways, because just when you think you've heard it all, I guess I never think I've heard it all, but you hear something new.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm sort of continually surprised by the some of the things that turn people on,
mm-hmm.
That are way outside the realm of things that turn me on. That's always interesting to have somebody go, "Hey, have you ever heard of, you know, this activity?" And go like, "Oh, wow, I didn't know that people did that to get turned on." But now at this point, I think anything you can imagine is somebody's turn on.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, right?
That's true. Even having sex with trees, which that one still blows me away.
Okay, there you go. And I don't want to gross people out, but I just recently heard about people who are turned on by vomit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I know. And there's a part of me that goes like, "Oh, okay. Well, okay. If that's what does it for you, you know." So I think there's an ongoing process of letting go of judgment about other people and their sexuality, because I'm just really cultivate the attitude of, if it's consensual, if it gives you pleasure, if it turns you on, you can find other people to share that with, enjoy, go for it. Like, just let go of the shame and let go of the internal shame that we do to ourselves and other people. So
mm-hmm.
I think that there's just ongoing opportunities to practice that. In the world, right? So I don't know about if that's surprising, but it's certainly, like I said, every now and again, somebody just like tells me about something that I go like, "Oh, okay, I guess I could still be surprised."
In terms of the work you've done over the years, what have been some of the most gratifying moments where it's like, "Ah, this is exactly why I do what I do"?
Oh, that's a great question. There's so many, but one just pops in the mind, and that was I was doing a retreat, an intensive retreat, and it was a 3-day, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it was Sunday morning, and we were having a sharing, you know, to begin the day, and there was a couple, and the woman and the couple had never had an orgasm. And in the sharing circle, I could see when they walked in, she was lit up. And they had started the retreat like barely looking at each other, much less, and they came in and they were just all over each other, love muffins, you know. And in the circle she shared that the night before, she had not only had her first orgasm, but had several orgasms, including one with intercourse.
Oh my gosh.
That's, I know.
Awesome.
I know. It was just like, oh, that's just amazing. Like, you know, like that. Early on, I was teaching a class. It was a women-only class about female orgasm, and a woman who was 63 started crying in the middle of class, and that happens sometimes. And she shared that at 63 and the year before, she'd had the first three orgasms of her life, and that she'd come to this class because she was determined to have more of them and not, you know, sort of go the rest of her life without that pleasure. And she was crying, though, because she's saying, why didn't somebody teach me this when I was 20?
Wow.
And I was like, I wish somebody taught me this when I was 20, and I wish everybody learned this way before we were 20, and I'm glad you're learning it now. But it was also kind of a little heartbreaking that there was this challenge that she'd had. And yeah, oh, gosh, I got lots of stories like that, but...
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not even just about female orgasm, too, because I've had men who, you know, suddenly discover that their experience of orgasm has been somewhat limited in genital experience, and now they're able to turn on their whole body energy and have these amazing whole body expanded experiences. So I just want to make sure people, it's not just about female orgasm.
Yeah. And I think that's something we forget about, or sometimes I think is shocking, because I think back in the 70s/80s, and I'm dating myself now, but getting sex ed in school way back when, and where it was almost about the female responsibility. And I joke about it with some of my friends now, where it was always, okay, you need to say no, need to say no, need to say no. And all of a sudden, you hit your 30s, and a lot of men I know, their sex drive, some of them, it depletes because they've hit their peak already. And all of a sudden, it's like, hey, what about me now? So, and it's kind of shocking, actually, and a little bit hard not to, just ego-wise sometimes, just to not take it personally, because it's almost that expectation that... And for men, I think that's probably really hard on them society-wise, where people do expect them to always be rearing and ready to go.
Yeah, I think people in male bodies and people in female bodies, we tend to have different things we have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think for most women, we need to learn to find our path to orgasm and then how to make that an assured path and expand our pathways. But for most of us, once we reach our orgasm and get more skilled with it, it's not that hard for us to go to more expanded kind of multiple expanded mega orgasmic states. I think for most men, they had no problem finding their orgasm. not no problem at all. But then they get kind of trapped in this sort of genital pathway to a limited kind of orgasm. And so I think for men, it's often about learning to expand their pathways as well.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of men, when they're younger, it just doesn't matter. They have so much sexual energy that they can just, you know, kind of keep going or get hard again or, you know, they have lots of libido. And I think for men, as they age, we don't have a good understanding of male aging. We do have this expectation that men should always be ready to go and always want to have sex, and so there's this performance anxiety and pressure, plus a lack of understanding that for all of us, our libido goes through different phases at different times of our lives, and that's normal. And I'll say particularly also as men get into their 40s and 50s and 60s, a lot of them are pretty shocked and surprised at the changes of aging. And yet, for many men, that's the opportunity to start going like, oh, wait, I can learn how to run my orgasmic energy. I don't even need to have a hard penis in order to do that. And so sometimes for men, that's when they really start expanding and exploring how to have more pleasure, really. So it's interesting how we have different things to learn. And then, of course, for women, then we hit menopause, and it's like, whoa. I know everyone was telling me about this, but I didn't really believe them.
And for those who may not know what happens when women hit menopause in terms of sexuality, can we talk about that for a moment?
We could. Well, here's what I've been, my theory has been for decades, and now I'm on the other side of menopause, so I get to discover if my theory was correct. And my theory has always been that menopause is this big energetic shift, and that women are sort of have a choice point. And if we choose to keep our sexual energy circulating on a regular basis and choose to be turned on, we're going to stay juicy as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
And for women who, especially if sex hasn't been such a great experience for them, it's really easy to kind of go like, oh, my libido is gone. Great. I never have to do that again.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, so when I was younger, it was like there was always a low flame under my pot of water. And so I was always like at least at a simmer. And the water was hot. And it was didn't take much to turn the flame up and get the sexual energy running.
Mm-hmm.
But now postmenopausally, it's more like, oh, I've got to go collect wood and build a fire under my pot of water. And if I do that regularly and, you know, keep my erotic imagination going and keep my having regular arousal and orgasm, then it becomes easy to do that. But if I get lazy, I'd be like, oh, I don't feel like collecting wood. I don't feel like turning myself on. Oh, it's way too much work. And then, you know, it's sort of the longer I go between getting turned on, the cooler the water gets, and then the harder it is to get it hot again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking the advice of that I've been gathering for decades from the juicy crones, you know, the older women who are still really sexy and sexually activated, and they all said, you got to consciously choose it. And so I'm like, okay, I got it.
And that's very good to know. So I think it's important. In terms of men, when as they get older, for them, is it similar where they've got to make a choice as well? Just because I keep thinking of all the sales of Viagra and everything that for men in terms of is there things that they can do besides, like obviously breath practice and letting their imagination go as well? But is there other things that they should be doing that are different than women because of the gender differences and hormonally?
Well, you know, actually, all of the things that I teach can be used for all the things we all need to learn.
Okay, nice.
So for women, how to get turned on more deeply, quicker, how to bring your sexual energy into your genitals. For men, how to slow down, how to spread out, and how to cool it down. And so breathing, you can use your breath to fire it up or cool it down. And the more skilled we get, the more we can do that during our erotic experiences as well, and then we build more sexual charge. So for all of us as we age, that ability to turn ourselves on and fire up our sexual energy and direct it where we want it to go, you know, those are the same tools that we can use. So for men and for women, the more you get skilled, the more options you have. So how do we move our sexual energy into our genitals, or how do we move it out of our genitals into the rest of our body? You know, these are learnable skills, and whether we learn them now or later, they're the same skills, so we might as well be practicing, right? So you know, if I was practicing playing the guitar since I was young, I would be really good at it now. and I would know how to, even if my instrument was getting older,
well,
I'd know how to get the best out of what I have.
it's true, and I think we forget about that. And my next question may be a weird one, but just I've been told by just other guests I've had on that pornography addiction is kind of on their rise. And with that, is in terms of as a society, is there things that we should, could, would be doing? Just because I've just heard from relationship coaches, etc., that there's been issues sometimes where people come in seeking intimacy where because with the porn addiction, it gets in the way of the relationship. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts in regards to that.
Oh, it's not a weird question. It's a great question.
Okay.
So the first thing is I don't use the term porn addiction.
Okay.
Addiction is a very specific and particular model
mm-hmm.
that doesn't work for me when we're talking about sexuality and sexual turn-on.
Okay.
What I think we do have is we tend to fall into habits, to patterns.
Mm.
And so it's like if you went walking in the woods and you found this great sweet swimming hole and you jumped in and it was wonderful, you'd go, oh, the next time I go walking in the woods, I'm going to go the same way I went.
Mm.
And after a while, you develop a path, and that's great because, you know, this path will get you to your turn-on and get you to your orgasm, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You go down the same path over and over, it becomes a rut. You stay in the same rut, it becomes a trench. And then after a while, you think there's no other way to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what happens with porn, and I also think, and that tends to be more with men, and I'll say this with women, it can be using a vibrator, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very true.
Right? So women, I have a lot of women who are afraid they become addicted to their vibrator,
mm-hmm.
same terminology. And so just think they're shortcuts. They're paths, right? And sometimes I want to walk, and sometimes I want to ride my bike, and sometimes I just want to drive because I just want to get there fast, right? So there's nothing wrong with the path. The problem is when we get to the point where we don't have any other paths. So for all of us, whatever our paths are, whether it's porn or vibrators or whatever, is to start to learn how to develop more pathways.
Okay.
And the more pathways we have, the more choice we have. So for people who porn is their only path, it's not that you're addicted. It's not that porn is terrible. It's that you need to turn it off so you can find your other pathways to your turn-on and learn how to play the rest of your instrument, not just the porn goes in your eyeballs and stimulates that part of your brain.
Mm.
So how do you turn on the rest of the whole body? How do you play with your sexual energy? How do you learn to use your erotic imagination?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because porn is kind of like, hey, if you just watch TV all the time, you're not really going to be learning how to entertain yourself, right?
So
those are all skills that we can develop. So I do think for people who are in the porn trench,
mm-hmm.
It's really useful to turn it off and tune in to your own body and tune into your self-pleasure and tune into sensations and play with your breath and play with your erotic energy and I, like I said, the thing goes with women and vibrators.
Mm-hmm.
Turn it off sometimes and use your hand and turn on your whole body and learn to use those other tools. And then occasionally using your vibrator or porn or whatever turns you on is fine. I think there's another element to porn, which is that it doesn't teach good technique, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're watching porn and you're thinking, oh, I will do to a real human being what I'm seeing on the screen, and you don't get the same effect, it's because what you're watching isn't very educational. You know, you're not seeing good technique. You're not seeing how to turn a partner on. You're not seeing how to turn yourself on. You're not seeing anything really much about connection
mm-hmm.
and communication and how to play with and run erotic energy with a partner.
Hmm.
And so that's all learnable stuff. But you're not going to learn it from watching porn.
So for young people, because we've got a lot of people at UBC right now who have just come back to school, and I'm going to say probably on average, probably 18 to about 30. Mm-hmm. And I know I've had some people who are in their late teens, early 20s actually tell me that they wish they could just hire somebody to teach them how to have sex, because they're embarrassed if they find somebody that they really care about, it's not going to be any good because they're not any good at it and they can't get out of their own head. And in terms of the practice making perfect, where do you start when you're at where you're at the raw stages, maybe, you know, have been kissed, maybe had sex once or twice? Very minimal in terms of actual stuff, and only exposure is mainly to porn and what you've heard from your friends.
Right. Well, you know, we all were at the start of our sexual mm-hmm. journey at some point. So I actually like to say, practice doesn't make perfect because there really is no perfect.
Touché.
Practice makes access. Mm. The more you practice something, the more automatic it becomes. It's like driving a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you first started driving, you were like, oh, my gosh, I hope I don't kill anybody, and I have to steer, and I had a stick shift, and, you know, and I had to figure out where I was going. There was no navigator. There's all these skills. You know, but at a certain point, you're just driving, and you're not thinking about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the process of learning is. So I think that we don't give our young people any help in learning how to navigate their sexual energy. And so I think it's sort of like we're drop them in a kayak in class 4 rapids without a paddle, and we say, good luck, don't mm-hmm. crash, whatever you do. And, of course, plenty of them do have these consequences that come from not being able to navigate. So I mm-hmm. think if we think about sexuality as a learned set of skills, then it would be easier for people to go, oh, well, I should probably learn how to paddle my kayak in the shallow water. And then as I become more skilled, I go into the deeper and deeper currents,
mm-hmm.
The deeper water and the stronger currents. So there's nothing wrong with not knowing. We all didn't know until we learned, and the ideal person to learn a lot of this stuff with is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how you work and how you operate and what gives you pleasure and what turns you on and how to play with your own sexual energy. That's all the solo part.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, you know, we do have a lot of this sort of casual sex hookup culture, and there's nothing wrong with casual sex, except it's not a great learning environment.
No. No.
So your best learning for partner sex is going to be with somebody that you have a connection with and you trust, and you can figure out how to communicate and talk, and then you're in a playful, creative exploration of what you like and what you don't like and what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I think that porn and actually just all romantic movies ever are bad role models for is they don't show people communicating about anything.
No.
And so I think it's useful to kind of slow things down and work on communicating and learning how to be in a relaxed, playful, fun, musical improvisational experience together.
Mm.
So if you're with a partner you trust, you can say, I don't really have a lot of experience. I'm kind of nervous. I'm having a hard time figuring out what to do. Maybe we can figure it out together. You know, what if we try this? Let's see how that goes. Oh, that worked great. Or, oh, that didn't work so good. That's what we really need for a good, for our starter relationships, mm-hmm. where we can figure it out together, and then recognize that in any partner sex that you have for the rest of your life, you're always going to be learning new things and learning about the not just a new partner, but even an old partner, a partner you've had for a long time. If you want to keep it yummy, you have to keep having newness and learning and trying new things. And so these are life skills for sex, not even just starter skills.
No, it's true. And I'm really glad that you mentioned about the communication piece, because I think it's one of the fundamental, basically foundational blocks. And I don't mean block as in blocking somebody. I mean blocks as in if it was a brick for building the house of a relationship. I think communication's key.
Yeah, exactly. But how do we learn to do that?
And how do we learn how to do that? It's one of those things I wish was part of sex ed in school.
There's a lot of things I wish was part of sex ed in school.
I'm going to ask you that next.
We could be teaching these skills to little kids, because these are about communication, about boundaries, about checking in, consent, respect. I mean, those are things we could be teaching little kids.
Okay.
Right? You check it. You ask if someone will share a toy with you. You respect other people's personal space. I mean, these are communication skills that in my fantasy world we would be teaching throughout education.
Mm-hmm.
How do we negotiate? How do we work it out when we have a problem? How do we give feedback in a way that doesn't land as critical? How do we request a behavior change? Right? And imagine if we were teaching that starting in kindergarten and first grade, that by the time puberty hit, we'd all have those skills that would be the foundation for being able to, you know, say to a partner, I'm not really comfortable with that. Can we do this instead? I'd love to explore with you, but I'm not comfortable with these activities, but I'd love to try this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and would that work for you? And, you know, so it's funny, because I think we think these are just skills about sex, but they're really skills about relationship.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I keep thinking what you, because you're mentioning in terms of teaching things in school, there would be a lot of things you'd like to teach them. And that's a huge piece of it, about the relationship piece. Mm-hmm. And I can totally envision that, where it'd be taught from early on. Is there any additional pieces that you'd love to have in there as well, if you could completely rewrite the curriculum in North America?
Oh, I would so love to. Yeah, there is a really important piece, and it's about pleasure.
Yes.
And this is interesting, because even in my, I mostly teach to the lay public, but I also do professional trainings and conferences. And I have a couple of different presentations that I've been trying to get accepted at different conferences, and they just won't go for it. It's about why we should be teaching about pleasure when we're teaching about sex,
as opposed to abstinence.
Well, you know, it's even in comprehensive sex education, where mm-hmm. they're teaching about pregnancy prevention and disease prevention. And they might even be teaching about, you know, communication skills about, you know, consent and checking in. They're still not talking about pleasure.
Wow.
Because God forbid we should let our teens know that sex is pleasurable. Because then they're going to want to do it. And so we've got this very bizarre relationship with pleasure, where it's as if we're afraid to teach about it. And yet, I'm so excited, I finally got to do a piece of this last summer. I was teaching at a ASEC Summer Institute, which is a four-day learning intensive. It's a small group. It was amazing. And I started out by, brainstorming with the room, why are we scared of pleasure? What's bad about pleasure? And I filled, you know, like three pieces of paper.
Wow.
The big giant stickies.
Yes.
Of all the negatives we have about pleasure. You know, it's dangerous and it's indulgent and all these other negatives.
Wow.
And then why are we so hesitant to include it? I'm talking with sex educators and therapists and academics, and why don't we include it? Because we're afraid it will it will give people license to have irresponsible sex.
Okay.
And then, so, but what would be the pluses if we included this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, the kids would trust us because they would know we weren't bullshitting them.
That's so
right?
true.
That's the first thing. They'd be like, oh, yes, right, you're telling us the truth. Okay, that would be good. But the other thing is the things, all of the skills that we want them to learn, all the communication skills and boundary skills, all of those things, they're the same skill set that we can use to negotiate for our pleasure.
Hmm.
Right? So if I can teach young people, this is how you ask for what you want, and this is how you ask for what will give you pleasure, those are the same skills that you're going to use to say what you don't want and to create healthy boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, like, these are the skills, and they're more likely to learn them if we say, this is how you learn to get more pleasure. And by the way, you can also use this to stay safer and have a better, you know, better relationship with consent and all these other things. So that's my big thing that I think we're afraid of. We're afraid of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Yep.
No, I would, you know, I wish you videotaped that. That'd be a really cool video and I could see that going viral.
That's interesting. We totally should videotape the Summer Institute. I'll get to do it again somewhere eventually.
Yay! Or if you've still got the pieces of paper.
Some other people will be brave enough to let me do it. Because you know what? They're very afraid that the fundamentalist right-wing people will attack them.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't, you know, put on a program I'm teaching about, you know, teaching pleasure in sex education. They would be attacked for that.
Mm-hmm.
Held up as a terrible, awful, horrible thing.
And yet, it would solve so many other problems. It really would on so many levels, like you said, about consent.
Right.
You just violence so much stuff on so many levels, and the shame and stigma that sometimes I think is why people don't have orgasms, because they can't relax enough to let the body just really breathe deep into stuff and connect.
Yeah, and if we were talking about pleasure, we would also be lifting the shame.
Hmm.
You know, and the shame is also what keeps us from talking about sex with our partners.
Mm-hmm.
We're so ashamed that we can't talk. We'll do it, but we can't talk about it because of the shame.
Yeah.
Right? And so anything we could do that would help shift us away from that shame, the shackles of shame, would really be a wonderful and positive thing for pleasure, for health, for all of the things that we would hope for from sex.
So on that note, is there an age limit to when people can read your books?
Not for me, no.
Okay.
I mean, I envision that this book would be a great book for any young person, teen, adolescent who's at the start of their journey, because it talks about your relationship with yourself, not just self-pleasuring, not just your solo sex, but your relationship with all of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be a great thing for young people to get at the beginning of their journey.
No, I think it's fabulous. I think that would be very important. Actually, that would be even cooler if a year from now, if it's included for curriculum for sex ed.
Oh, that's a lovely fantasy.
You never know.
It could happen. I'm going to envision it.
Well, if not at the high school level, maybe at the university level when they're doing gender studies.
Thing.
That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could wave a magic wand, because you've got for Succulent Sex Craft, the launch is coming up on the September 14th to the 16th, where you can get all sorts of goodies as well.
Yep, succulentsexcraft.com.
I love it. if you could wave a magic wand, what would this look like when you're looking back at this like a year from now?
Well, I really hope that people are so inspired and transformed by this book that it ripples out and really becomes something that reaches huge numbers of people and is not just transformative personally for someone who reads it, but is ultimately becomes culturally transformative. That's my big vision, is that we co-create a culture that's celebrates sex and in a responsible and respectful way, and understands that it's something we learn how to do, and we can learn how to do it better, just like relationships, really.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We learn how to do them, and we can learn how to do them better. And
mm-hmm.
So that's my vision, and I'm sticking to it.
I love that vision. In your travels and in the education that you've shared with people, is there anywhere in the world you've traveled that has a really cool culture in terms of sexuality where you're just like, wow, this is I'd love to take this tiny slice and share it with people where they can see that this is actually possible?
Well, I haven't been to the places that I most want to go that I think are most likely.
Okay.
But I can tell you, it's not the U.S. and Canada.
No.
I think actually a lot of the Scandinavian countries are doing really well in these areas. If we look at rates of diseases and unwanted pregnancies and those sorts of things, we are doing really abysmally.
Yes.
In our countries, in our neighboring countries, and in most of those countries, sex education is part of their whole education, and people there really do seem to have a more, this is natural, this is normal, there's a lot less shame. So I think that there's places in the world that are doing better than North
American.
And there are a lot of places that are doing worse. I just have to point out that, we live in countries where, let's see, women can drive cars and, own property and things like that. So we also need to remember there's a lot worse places to be than our countries. So.
That's a very, very, very valid point. And I know with some of the Scandinavian countries, they've actually balanced out a lot of the gender roles, which is interesting as well. Things like maternity and paternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, I believe it's either 60 or 70%. I think it's 70%. It's quite high of what the take home is. And it really encourages just stronger relationships and connections when you choose to have a family.
Well, equality of the genders and a sex-positive culture are linked.
Mm-hmm.
So the places that have the most gender equality tend to have the most sex-positive cultures. And the places that have the least gender equality tend to have the most sex-negative culture, right? So it's always connected. The status of women and the culture's relationship to sexuality, just they're always connected everywhere you look.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, really important, especially if anybody's looking at gender studies or just in general, just being able to support both men and women. And on all genders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, and in everything. And you pointed out a great example, because we tend to think that, gender equality is about equal pay for women or that sort of thing. But it's also about men being able to get paternity leave when they have a new child.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, there's all these different parts of it. And I don't actually know how how it is in Canada, but in the U.S. we have some of the worst policies when it comes to supporting families, babies and young children. We're just awful, just terrible. We're just basically like you have a baby and like you're sort of on your own, and there's just so little support, and it's horribly stressful for families.
It's not great here. It's not bad, though. But yeah. I know that there is some hope. I know I've been brought in for a couple of circles with a couple of different politicians who've been trying to pitch on a national level to make some big changes. That was actually how I originally found out about the Scandinavian countries. Because they brought in a whole leadership circle of different entrepreneurs of different levels, all female, and just wanted to see in the big number one thing that people wanted to change was childcare, because that was what was affecting women and women entrepreneurs as well, and being able to make it more balanced, so it was more fair for both men and women. When she mentioned that model, everybody just loved it.
Right. Well, of course,
higher taxes though.
Well, yeah, but...
But it's worth it.
You've got health care.
That's a good point. We do.
I live in the only industrialized country in the world that just doesn't have health care for everybody.
Wow.
So, God, that's a little embarrassing.
Oh. Thank goodness they have you, though.
Well, thank you. That's very
it's true. So, which is shifting a lot of things on so many levels. And
that's just doing my job, ma'am.
But it inspires others to do the same. And as I said at the beginning, yeah, Nobel Peace Prize would be very helpful if we could implement a lot of the work that you're doing. So not just in our personal relationships, although that's with where it starts, with ourselves and then with the people we love. And then as in the education system.
Mm-hmm. And then we have to ripple it out. Starts making other changes that really will ultimately, you know, maybe save our planet. Well, at least save us. I mean, the planet's going to survive no matter what we do to it. But, you know, I mean, really, it's that shift in consciousness that sees the connections, right? That recognizes that we're all connected. Kind of big.
Yeah, it's huge.
It is.
It's really huge. Sherry, thank you so much for being on the show. And I just want to plug one more time, succulentsexcraft.com. I'm actually on your intimateartscenter.com.
Yep, you can get there either way. And big book launch is happening just a couple days, September 14th through 16th. Got to buy the book and get all the juicy, fun wisdom in the book and all that other amazing cool stuff that my friends are giving away to
which
support it.
So. Is so cool.
Yeah, it is.
And it's only 3 days, 1 hour, and according to your website, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds
there
away.
There we go. Getting close.
It's getting very, very, very close. And I shared the link on Facebook as well, on my personal as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Spread the word.
Yay.
Right? Let other people know.
And thank you so much for doing all that you do and taking the time to stay up. I know you said you're a night owl, but even still, thank you for taking that time to chat on the show and to share with us Canadians in Vancouver.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very... Oh, he is asking me a question, I think.
I don't know. You want to do it on air?
You can ask me a question on air if you're going to ask me a question on air. You can say hi to Sherry as well. She's my guest. We're just saying goodbyes.
Hello? That's me. You always deal with this sexual things and on and on. I don't know if that's going to just come to the... Is that going to make any sense?
Okay.
I was always wondering about lesbians. If they want to really like, they have kind of this very bad attitude towards guys and they just love the same sex. In most of the cases, they're trying to make themselves so ugly, so unattractive. Why? What's behind it? I just don't get it.